everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I'm so excited to share this week's conversation with you all because I had the opportunity to sit down with Chris Dorch, the founder of the Chattanooga Film Festival. And we had such a good time chatting. I'm actually attending Chat Film Fest for the first time this June, and I'm so stoked. He told me how he got into horror way too young, as so many of us did, why he started the Chat Film Fest, and what it was like to be one of the first film festivals to go virtual during the pandemic. He also told me which films he's most looking forward to this year, and the films he tends to shy away from. If you want to join the community over on Patreon, click the link in the show notes, and for only $1 a month, you'll get access to early episodes, a monthly newsletter, and more. I'd love to have you over there. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen, and let's get into my conversation with Chris Dorch. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here and for knowing that the Chattanooga Film Festival exists. I appreciate both of those things.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I've heard of the Chattanooga Film Festival for a couple of years now. I have a bunch of friends that go on the regular, or they started going when it was virtual, so during the pandemic, and then they've gone a couple times since then when it's been in person, and I'm going this year and I'm very excited. But do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Chris Dorch. I'm the festival director and the lead film programmer for the Chattanooga Film Festival in Tennessee. And though I'm always flattered when folks like yourself have heard of us, I don't expect people to know who we are. So just like a little context and background on us. We're kind of a genre film festival, though we do feature so much horror every year that that's also how some people think of us. We're one of Movie Maker Magazine's 25 coolest film festivals in the world. We've been named by Dread Central one of the best horror film festivals in the world multiple times. Also been on Movie Maker's list of best genre film festivals a few times. So even though we're relatively young, we're only turning 11 this year, we feel pretty good about those things. And finally, we got our Fangoria approved status. So I can die now. That feels good. So yeah, we're just trucking along. And I, like you said about virtual and your friends that found us that way, like that, the virtual experiment that began in 2020 is something that's kind of become intrinsic to our festival's identity now. So it's amazing how many new friends and how many new audience members we found that way. So it's kind of amazing.
That's so amazing. Congrats on your Fangoria approval sticker. That's awesome. So we're going to chat about the festival in a little bit, but let's start first things first. What's your favorite scary movie?
Gosh, that is the hardest question in the world. And I'm sure that you get told that by every guest that you have ever. For me, it's almost like if you were to give me an advent calendar, like for Christmas, where you get like, you open the little door and you get like a chocolate snowman every day, I would need at least 31 of those days because it's filled with a lot of things like that I know many of your guests have name checked before. Things like A Nightmare on Elm Street, Poltergeist, The Shining. I'm a big haunted house and ghost story fan. Things like The Changeling, Burnt Offerings, even like creature features like Tremors, Reanimator, The Thing, Phantasm, like so many things that I love that would be in that little advent calendar for there. So, and again, that's also like to make everything have to do with snacks somehow. Like, it's like if you go to Baskin Robbins and they have that flavor of the month that they're featuring, I'll always have at least one thing that I'm like newly obsessed with that particular month. And right now it's like the fog for some reason. I'm having a serious fog renaissance.
That's funny. I've actually never seen The Fog. So,
oh man, it's so much fun. Yeah. It's such a good, like when October approaches, that's the ultimate like campfire ghost story of a movie, I think.
I'm just curious. Are you originally from Chattanooga?
I grew up here, but I moved away in about 1999 to attend film school in Nashville and then came back here to use what little I had learned in film school to kind of take an industrial filmmaking job and just hated every second of my life and was making like all state insurance sexual harassment training seminar videos and things like that. And so CFF kind of started as a way to very much battle the depression of not getting to do anything that felt creative. And even though the arts had moved by leaps and bounds in my time away from the city, film had just still been left behind. And what little film there was, there wasn't anything really genre related, wasn't anything classic. So it felt like if I complained, I wasn't doing anything to fix the situation. So we tried to start, and we got our start as like a pop-up movie theater, kind of like a film club in any bar, restaurant, or abandoned building that we could make the electricity work in.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. Yeah, I wish more people would do that in smaller cities and towns, 'cause
Absolutely.
I always hear people be like, there's nothing like that in my town. I was like, well, then go start it. So
Yeah.
how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
I go so far back with it that it's one of those things where I can't figure out a point in my life where it wasn't in there. So, like, for example, there are these great orange monster, almost like picture books for kids by a British publisher called Crestwood House. And they were like on subjects like things that were a little like broader, like there was a mad scientist one with, Dr. Frankenstein and, the Invisible Man and things like that. But then they'd like do, there's like a blob one and there was Godzilla and vampires and, things like that. So I kind of learned about a number of movie monsters that way for the first time. And then, like, one of the first memories I have in my life, period, is like coloring a picture of the creature from the Black Lagoon in a coloring book that I can only imagine my parents bought for me to fan the flames of like that nascent monster love. And it just kind of kept on from there. Like, also, like, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, which was like just such a like a peak era for gateway horror. We had like, Little Monsters and the Witches and the Monster Squad and, Are You Afraid of the Dark and, the beginning of the Goosebumps TV era. So it was just like a great time to start to fall in love with the genre and then be eased into it gently by the media of the day before I, dropped myself off to the deep end where I am now. So.
I was like a super fan of Are You Afraid of the Dark, so
Oh, it's delightful. I heard you mention on another episode that you also got the Voodoo collection on sale.
yes.
Like the whole, and I was like, there's a person that knows where to find a bargain. Like, this is going to go well, this interview. So,
So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
gosh, I don't know that I would classify myself as perfectly sane, but for me, I, again, I've listened to your show quite a few times and I hear that same origin story start to happen again. For a lot of us, it's like we were bullied, we didn't have control over like the fear or the anxiety of our own lives, and it gave us both a way to start maybe facing our own fears and then also, kind of finding catharsis through them. There's a mental health and horror documentary being made right now, and I was really happy to hear that that production was a thing because I just do feel like those things are linked in really interesting ways. So for me, it's been both about facing my own demons and also my love of everything from, special effects, which as a kid, like everybody wants to be a fireman or an astronaut. My first, desired gig was I'm going to be a special effects guy. I'm going to be the guy that gets to tell everyone more blood in that shot. And so I kind of have been, surfing that wave for pretty much my entire life now.
Oh, I love it. What scares you in horror movies today?
That's a great question. I'm starting to see, even after all these years and all these subgenres, you're starting to see like subgenres come back. Like in the case of religious horror right now, we've got Immaculate in theaters. We've got the first Omen coming out this week, which I'm really excited about. I love that filmmaker and it's her debut feature. And so I think like it's cool when we get, nods and returns to little things like that religious horror thing. But I'm also starting to see stuff like, that can't really be described in the terms that maybe past horror is, like stuff like I would name a movie like Skinamarink or a film that we've even shown here like The Outwaters, which are movies that can be divisive for some people, but for those of us that like stayed awake as kids staring into the darkness of our room being like, oh my God, there's a face in the darkness, finding all of those things there, I really think that kind of horror is incredible. And also like films like The Outwaters have really leaned into what can be special about the sound design of horror films. That's like a movie that if you watch with headphones could actually shave years off of your life, I feel like. And so I think there's a lot of interesting, like we're showing a film this year that hasn't been announced yet. So this is a scoop for you, I guess. But it's a movie called Red Rooms that's
Oh,
kind of a
I've heard about
It's
that.
fantastic. It's
Ooh.
deeply disturbing, but what's wild about it is that there isn't a lick of on-screen violence. It's everything that you're hearing, and you're seeing this jury see
Okay.
these pieces of evidence events that are linked to the case of a serial killer. And it also kind of gently shames everyone who watched Dahmer on Netflix. You know, like, you all love true crime, huh? There's actual victims here. So it's just kind of a brilliant way to use audio in a way that I think, you know, I'm glad to see coming back to the genre.
Oh, that's great. I recently watched last weekend, I watched You'll Never Find Me on Shudder, and I think
Oh,
that would have
terrific.
been, I think I wish I
Yeah.
had watched that with like headphones on, because I think that would have been really spooky.
100% the kind of headphone movie I'm talking about. And by the
No,
way, sorry for the world's longest answers. I am
I love
very much
it.
a stream of consciousness human being. So I was like, oh God, she's gonna ask questions and who knows where it's gonna go. So
No, totally. Let it riff. And I watched all of Dahmer in like 3 days when I was sick with COVID. That was an experience. I needed
So
a
you're
break
telling me
after
you're
that.
part of the problem? Is that what
I'm
you're? No, I'm with you. Like I share the fascination for that things and those kind of things. And I worked on the film After Midnight, and we had Henry Zebrowski from Last
Oh,
Podcast on the left
yeah.
and our cast. And it was like, I can't just dismiss what any of those folks are doing, because it's like I would see these giant boxes of books get, you know, FedEx to set for Henry to do his research. And you know, Marcus is like the lead researcher on that show. So it's like anybody that's putting that much thought and research and love to what they're doing, I can't, you know, give it any criticism for a second. It's just wild how it's caught on and how many murder fans there seem to be in this world. So it's like, you know, what comes after that? I don't know.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of true crime in the last month. I don't know why, but in the
Yeah,
month
so we're
before
like
that,
6 months away from Videodrome now, it feels
oh
like.
my
So it's
God. I hope not.
yeah, same.
Was Henry nice?
Henry's wonderful. Henry's
Oh, good.
hilarious. And God, all the takes of him ad-libbing things there are just insanely numerous. And I wish there was even more room on that Blu-ray that Arrow put out for just all the stuff that that guy did on our set. And also the incredibly disgusting amount of times he shot, like, you know, fake shot glasses of like Diet Pepsi to make it look like whiskey in the movie. The guy just put a lot of it away. And I was impressed even at that. So.
Oh, so cool. So you kind of hinted at this a little bit before, but what is your favorite subgenre in horror and what's your least favorite?
God, that's a really good question. My favorite, like I said, I'm a sucker for a good ghost story, but that's kind of like the joke I tell here is that like my favorite subgenre is like when a film has five subgenres. It's like we really love it here when someone's painting their horror story with such a broad brush that it dips into like 10 or 12 other genres. And like there's a lot of things this year that really feel like that just potpourri of the filmmaker's influences in like such a cool way. So that's the kind of stuff I really love. What I don't love are think kind of things that punch down. Like I know there's a great number of people, like an incredible film journalist that's worked with us at the festival, BJ Colangelo, has written some really thoughtful essays on films like I Spit on Your Grave, but things with sexual assault or themes of that, rape revenge as a subgenre, it's not really for me. It's not really for this festival. And, you know, even though we're not afraid to show something that might be, you know, a harder edged ride or a little disturbing, as in the case of Red Rooms this year, we really do try to give people a content warning. This isn't about traumatizing someone. It's kind of showing them that they could float in the horror pool all along, you know, like rather than be these gatekeepers, be like, if you come with us on this journey, we will protect you, kind of a thing. And I feel like being someone's Sherpa through a genre is like a true honor. And like, if you break their trust by putting something in front of them that damages them, then it's not fun for anybody, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, last night actually, I just showed one of my good friends who hates horror, The Others, for the first time with Nicole Kidman.
Such a terrifying movie. That's a great
He
example
thought it
of a
was
thing.
fantastic. He was like, I
It's
love this
so good.
director. That was a great movie. When he realized what was going on, he was like, my mind is
It's such a
blown.
great twist. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of going to see something at a festival with no trigger warning, I went to Brooklyn Horror Film Festival. Love you guys, Brooklyn. To the final night in 2021, I think it was. And I had just read that this movie was a zombie movie. I
Was
mean,
it the
probably.
sadness? Are you going to tell me
Yeah.
the sadness?
Yeah,
Oh my
it
God.
was the
That's
sadness,
kind
and
of,
they
yeah.
introduced it and they were like, this is the most intense, gory movie we've ever seen, so good luck. And I was like, oh damn. I got
Gosh,
through
yeah.
it, but
Sure. A lot of sexualized violence and things that I don't love in
yeah.
that movie. So I'm with you on that. Like, that's one that you really got to tell people to saddle up for and give them some context. So,
Oh
gosh, I'm
yeah.
glad
Well,
you made it through. Yeah.
yeah. I don't have like really nothing besides animal torture or
I
anything like
feel the
that.
exact same way. We literally have rejected a couple of films this year just because of the extreme amount of like dog death that's
Ugh.
occurred. And
Yeah.
it's, you know, I've been at other festivals and I won't dox them by naming them, where they like, one year I was a juror at a festival that was like literally celebrating how many animal deaths there were in their films. And I'm just like, where am I? Why is this happening? So that's
Wow.
another thing that we really shy away from. And it's funny, we actually, a good friend of our festival is this producer, Milan Chakraborty, who's one of the producers of the film My Friend Dahmer. And so we showed that movie, and no matter what people thought Dahmer was going to do to people in that movie, they were totally cool with it. But every screening we did, and we did several, people would walk out into the lobby and be like, "You got to tell me right now, does he kill this dog?" And we'd be like, "No, you're good." But like, that's, you know, I feel like we're not alone there. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Even sometimes when I'm in the theater and I see like an animal come on screen, if I can, I'll take out my phone and go to doesthedogdie.com and just see if it's up
Which is
there
a
yet.
public service that site exists. I'm glad
I
that you're a
know.
visitor as well. So
Did you see Night Swim this year?
I did actually, and I had a really surreal experience a couple of weeks ago where I went to see Imaginary and I was just brain dead from watching a couple of days of shorts. And a guy in the front row turned around and he said, "Hey, no one else is in the theater, so I'm kind of disappointed, but I wanted to let you know I did rewrites on this, and my name is Bryce McGuire." So it ended up being the writer,
Oh,
director of Night Swim. So I was like, "Oh, wow, hey, what are you doing in Chattanooga?" kind of a thing. But yeah, I did see it. That was kind of a fun way to start the year, just because, like, I do feel like, for whatever you want to say about Night Swim, and I know some critics were, you know, kind of mixed on it, I love that the lore is wishing well based. I kind of
yeah.
think that's rad. I've never seen someone take the idea of a wishing well and make something dark out of it. And I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say that like they killed the cat for no reason, and I was very mad.
That cat pool filter death is no fun for anybody, man. I'm with you on that.
Do you have any favorite horror directors?
I have so many right now. Gosh, one person off the top of my head, I would say, is lately, Lee Wan L can do no wrong for me. I thought his Invisible Man take was absolutely incredible. And again, this is from a kid that was rooted in obviously Universal Monsters
Yeah.
from as far back. So, like, when the Dark Universe started to happen and Tom Cruise was there, I felt confused and sad. And then Lee just pulled up on the stick and, you know, started flying over that mountain rather than into it. And I feel like, you know, he's obviously, we've got Maggie Gyllenhaal making the Bride of Frankenstein remake now. We've got Lee doing the Wolfman. I just feel like that's in wonderful hands. Another Lee that I love is Lee Janiak, who I'm such a R.L. Stine, Fear Street, YA horror person. And I thought her Fear Street trilogy was just pitch perfect. And now we're getting The Prom Queen, another one of the great Fear Street books from her. Love that. Absolutely love Mike Flanagan, who himself is, of course, no stranger to a YA horror adaptation with Christopher Pike's The Midnight Club and things like that. Another guy I think is just an unbelievable teller of a great scary story, and also a dude that knows how to make a jump scare so well oiled that I can't even believe it. There's like a ghost emerges in the back seat of a car moment in Haunting of Hill House that
Yeah.
just took a week off of my life, no question. Also, Jordan Peele, who I think is like turned horror films into like appointment viewing again. Like, it's a big deal
Yeah.
when Jordan has a movie coming out. And I could say the same for James Wan now. I'm very glad, not that I wish any film to fail ever, but that some of these last wave of superhero movies are gonna, I think, give us back some true star players, like, you know, David Sandberg, who made Lights Out and the second Annabelle movie, and James Wan. Like, I want those guys back in horror. Like, let's get them back.
Yeah, definitely. Lee, who directed the Fear Street series, she is going to be at a screening of, I think she did the movie Honeymoon,
Honeymoon,
maybe.
love it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
there, I don't know if
fantastic.
I'm going, but yeah, it's happening downtown this week. So I do like the Fear Street series, though. I think the second movie was my favorite in
It's
it.
maybe my favorite too. Yeah, I
Yeah.
had fun with all of them, but the second one really hit it for me for sure.
Yeah, which is really weird because I don't usually like 80s summer camp horror movies, but that one
Were you,
maybe.
did you see Final Girls? Were you a fan of that, or were you not one of the yeah.
I've seen it once. I thought it was okay. I didn't hate it.
Yeah, that's one of those that I've kind of like, that's like we were talking about, kind of like at least like comfort things that like pop up into rotation. Like, I
Yeah.
have a rule when we're watching submissions that I won't ever let myself be in a bad mood when I watch like literally someone's baby that they have been sweating over for a
Yeah.
year with their cast and crew. So it's like Final Girls is one of those like camp set, so fun, lighthearted in tone movies that I'll throw on as that psychic palate cleanse sometimes.
Oh, I love it. So, like you said before, you're the festival director and lead programmer for the Chattanooga Film Festival. You kind of touched on this before, but where did the idea to start this film festival in Chattanooga come from initially?
I came back here and took that job I mentioned that I just utterly hated. And I felt like the people that kind of had the reins for film in Chattanooga were people that were going to do nothing but like PBS screenings and, whatever King's Speech or Oscar bait they could lure into town. And I just didn't like the idea that there wasn't any sense of humor to that, or that there wasn't anything looking into, like, I think there's a lot of great film history in the drive-in era. I think there's a lot of fun to be had from experiencing a movie that some people might call a B movie in a communal setting with the right group of equally warped people, and the people who are kind of in charge of things here, who ran a thing that was at the time called the Chattanooga Film Society, were just boring the shit out of me. And I just started this really goofy film club as a way to kind of be the change I wanted to see, kind of, and we would do things like pair up a great opening band with a movie, like we did the band Priest in front of movies like Here Comes the Devil, or we did the classic 80s movie The Legend of Billie Jean with a band called Peach Kelly Pop, like just really, really fun things like that. And that started to grow an audience that was so big that the Chattanooga Film Society people couldn't really ignore me anymore. And I think they kind of begrudgingly offered me a space on their board. And when I joined their board, I realized they were around for like years and years, but they hadn't done the thing that was their core mission, which was create a film festival in Chattanooga. And I was like, why don't you just try it? And they were like, oh no, we need 10 years before we try it. And I'm like, why 10? And they were like, because it's hard. And I said, well, what if we try it small and then make it bigger? And they were really against that too. So I kind of said, look, if you'll give me the freedom to at least attempt to raise money and come up with like a case study, kind of an experiment of a year for us, I'd like your permission to do it. And even though the dude who ran that organization did not want that to happen at all, the rest of the board, God bless them, voted with me. And before I knew it, I had raised our first almost $60,000 to make our first edition happen in 2014. And immediately upon that year happening and having as much horror and as much genre as it did in it, the Chattanooga Film Society disbanded. And they have never been seen or heard from since. So I kind of think we might have killed them with horror a little bit. Not that we didn't invite them to the party, because we absolutely did, but it's kind of funny. Like, I really feel in some ways like we kind of saved film from the clutches of darkness in Chattanooga. Like, it's in what I hope are at least more open-minded hands, if nothing else.
That's awesome. Yeah, you killed the society, the film society.
And now we run
Luckily.
a Patreon that we call the Double Secret Cinema Society, which is kind of like our little tiny obituary to them, where every month we do a virtual screening of just the wildest genre stuff that we can get our hands on. And it's nothing that is easily findable anywhere else. So it's really been a challenge, both to us as like film programmers, but also like we know that our audience has been fed their entire lives on a steady diet of cult and genre films now. Like, we want to surprise them. We want to hit them with some things that they may never see coming. So,
Oh, cool. What kind of movies have you streamed before?
we've done a lot of, I find that the made for TV era is something that has been completely looked over. So what we're doing this month is a made for TV movie starring James Brolin, Josh's dad, called Trapped. And it was made in 1973. He is a gentleman who has stayed just a little too long in the mall's department store and gotten locked in the mall. And the mall happens to have a team of six trained, ultra smart Dobermans that chase James for the duration of the motion picture. And it is a fucking delight, let me tell you. And that's a film that, like, I can also, we follow all of our members on Letterboxd and we can kind of see what they've rated. And I know that no one has seen this gem yet, and I can't wait to lay it on them. So it's things like that. Last month, we did a great Japanese kind of a psychedelic movie. Like, if you've ever seen the haunted house movie House, a movie called Pastoral to Die in the Country. Just really wild, great Japanese cinema that, is like 2 days away from getting an Arrow special edition or something. And it just hasn't happened yet. That boutique label, whoever they are, that's going to put this movie out and horror fans are going to love and discover it, just hasn't gotten to it yet. So that's kind of what we try to curate when we can.
Oh, that sounds like such an interesting lineup that you've had. Oh, well, if anyone that's listening wants to go check it out, go join his
Oh yeah, and every dollar
Patreon.
from it really goes directly toward the staging of the festival. We're completely volunteer run and a nonprofit. Like, we do this because we love it, not because we ever thought we would ever make any money at all. So
Oh, can you talk about how the festival has grown and evolved over the years?
absolutely. One thing that was kind of clear in the first 3 years was that because we were taking chances with the type of programming that we started, and I had a couple of very good allies really early on in the process of this festival. My hero and a person who helped me put our first budget together and really start to understand what the skeleton of a festival would look like, was this incredible woman named Jenny Bloom, who was with the Colorado Cinema Society and started what is now evolved into Overlook, but was at the time called the Stanley Horror Film Festival. And Jenny was just incredible, and there were no stupid questions, and I had so many questions, and she was just really wonderful and took me under her wing. And my other hero was Kristen Bell, not the actor, from Frozen. We had her as a guest 1 year, and everyone was like, "Kristen fucking Bell," and showed up, and it was Kristen from Fantastic Fest and not Kristen Bell from Frozen and Veronica Mars. So there was, a slight revolt, but she's another person that just really let me ask her a million questions. And I loved Fantastic Fest, what they were doing at that time. I thought of it as one of the best genre festivals in our country. And I really, was able to ask her so many things and get so much advice. And they really helped us kind of puncture the bubble of just being a regional film festival. And again, when you name yourself after your city, like the Chattanooga Film Festival, I think a lot of distributors or companies or studios or people kind of think that you're like a county fair, basically, that you're like 2 steps away from like giving a blue ribbon to a prize hog or something like that. And the reality was, by naming us after the city, I kind of avoided painting us into a corner of any type of movies, meaning that we can go wherever we want. Like, if there's a year where there's like 10 great rom-coms and we want to put them in the fest, they're going to fit. And by training our audience alongside us that we can go anywhere and do anything, and you're the kind of film fans that love that about us, it's really been an amazing kind of experience where we feel like we really can do anything. That said, I'm such a horror fan, as we've been talking about from birth, that there's no way for me to take that out of myself or the festival. And as our lead film programmer, for better or worse, this festival does kind of carry my voice with it every year. And that's also something that I think has helped us grow, because we weren't something that was programmed by a committee early on. We didn't have 10,000 voices in the room. We had a couple of warm-hearted programmers on the short side of things and a small team of people I've known and trusted for a lot of my professional life as a film programmer, even dating back to my time in Nashville, where there's a really terrific art house cinema called the Bell Court. Like, people that I've known for 20, 25 years that have really, know my taste, know our audience's taste, and I think have helped me make some really great choices. And that those choices have let our programming's reputation grow and grow. And then somehow it grew enough that in 2019, when or 2020 rather, when the world was starting to shut down, Microsoft out of nowhere contacted our festival and had chosen us to be, if we wanted to be, the guinea pig for trying out what a virtual festival was. And we really were one of the first festivals in the world that did it that way. Amazon had put a bunch of South by Southwest movies on demand, but to me, that was so heartbreaking to the filmmakers that had gotten in that year. They weren't getting to experience their movies with an audience. They weren't getting that sense of community and engagement. So our thought was like, how do we translate what's made us so fun, this Willy Wonka, bullshit, approach it with a kitchen sink and a tongue firmly in cheek formula that had been working on the ground. So we did everything from, making our own horror host, host every film at the festival and acted like we had gotten the keys to the world's shittiest public access station and sort of just approached it, as close as we could to our on the ground event. And that just utterly exploded for us. It caused our audience to more than double overnight. It really also started to teach us how much importance there is when it comes to accessibility in film festival presentation. Before we knew it, we were getting emails from hundreds of people that were telling us, "Look, I've disabled, I can't afford to travel. This is the first film festival experience I've ever gotten to have." Or we noticed lots of people were using the word attend, like, "I loved attending," which meant to me that, like, They felt like they were here, even though they were there. And if we're breaking down that barrier, even if it's just in people's minds, I feel like there's some serious power there. And so it's really given us the opportunity to find people all across the US. And now, literally, our entire team that work with me here, which we're tiny, there's like about six of us, including my mom, legitimately, they've all come to us by being a fan first and slowly kind of finding their way into the family. So I really love that too. That, Ashley Thomas, one of our festival managers here, she found us because she attended in 2020, and was all the way up in Nashville. And we do not have a marketing budget or anything resembling one. So it's been really cool to watch people sort of spread the word about us and kind of the weird little cult it's grown. It feels like, in addition to curating the movies, we've kind of curated this warm-hearted audience and a culture around them that I hope kind of feels like the antidote to things like what horror Twitter certainly feels like, which is just kind of like a wasteland of like hot takes and people trying to dunk on each other's opinions rather than respect at the fact that we're all different and artists objective. So, I hope we exist to be the opposite of that. Long answer. So sorry.
No, that's great. That's incredible. Yeah. Speaking of your audience, so would you say that your audience is mostly like Chattanooga based, or is it people from out of town or, internationally?
The first 3 or 4 years, we had a lot of people regionally, and then we started to expand into Atlanta and Nashville. After 2020, it's all over at this point. We sold tickets in Alaska this year. That's so cool to me that there is someone in Juneau, Alaska, tuning in. And then the same has happened with the submissions. We were just kind of marveling today that we first of all got over 140 more films submitted this year than we had last year, which
Oh
was
my gosh.
already like our record number of movies that we'd received. So we can't believe that grew that much. But also there was 33 countries this year. Like
Oh
there's a
wow.
film from Sri Lanka, there's a film from Iceland playing this year. And to read the cover letters of these filmmakers, they're well aware of us. They're citing, films that we showed a few years ago and saying those filmmakers were an influence on me, that you were a festival to champion their work or program it made me want to send you my work. And that's been really cool. So it's been wild to watch the way that it felt at first like we were puncturing the bubble. Now it just feels like the bubble's kind of expanding, and it's been kind of cool and also terrifying. Like I'm like, are we flying too close to the sun every year? Like we're about to become Fire Festival, everyone. We're gonna need more porta potties or something. I don't know.
No, I hope no, you'll never be a Fire Festival. You've been too successful so
Thank you
far.
for your support.
What would you say are some of the most like recognizable films that have come out of the festival?
So we were very lucky in that we've had relationships with people that I think are very, very beloved to genre fans now. And not even just films, like also writers, like people like Chris Cargill, who wrote Sinister and Doctor Strange. Like he's a person that kind of came and was doing everything from like goofy live script readings on the ground to like, being our dungeon master for a live D&D tournament to things like that. But like for films, like people like Benson and Moorhead, I would say Joel Gavargizian, who's coming back this year and is quickly just becoming a household name for film fans. People like Grady Hendrix and Clay Chapman, who are both incredible best-selling horror authors, but also are screenwriting. And another great example of that this year is a gentleman named Adam Caesar, who wrote this incredible trilogy of YA horror books called The Clown in a Cornfield series that are now themselves being turned into these great teen slashers. He started writing now, and his film Ghost Game is playing this year. So all of those folks, one thing we kind of pride ourselves on is really trying to have a relationship with our alumni, not just for one film, but keep that rolling throughout the years. So we're really lucky in terms of the number of people that have wanted to come back. Even people like Grady Hendrix, another author, screenwriter, has just really made time in his schedule for us. And it's just really, really wonderful. And it's been heartwarming to see. But like on the Benson and Moorhead tip, we've had a lot of fun with their stuff. Like when we showed The Endless, we did a free screening, and we always try to do some free things and some community things every year. So even if you don't have a dollar in your pocket and you want to be a part of our celebration, you can do that. But that year we made everyone join a cult to get access to the, and we had Dave Lawson, the producer who plays Smilin' Dave, the, completely mute cultist from the movie, standing at the door, giving people what we were calling ascension wafers. And we had printed all this fake religious, my multiverse savior, like literature and pamphlets. And so many people, we were taking it so seriously, thought we were really indoctrinating them into a cult. We actually had people walk out before they could, start the movie. But just things like that. And filmmakers that are not afraid to take those fun little risks and journeys with us. Like, that's kind of my like true joy in this job. And there's a lot of joy in it for me, truly. So.
What sorts of things do you look for in films when you're picking the movies that you're going to screen?
You know, I love that question a lot because I am such a sucker for trying to find themes in each year's programming. And like, I'll give you a couple of examples. Like, every day of the festival, there's a themed double feature. And even the themes of those double features resonate. Like, there, for example, like there's two incredible takes on vampire stories this year. And, you know, to me, the vampire genre is something kind of like zombies, where it's like, it's been done so much that at this point it has to be like a Train to Busan or something really special to kind of make me take notice. And vampires in the post-Twilight landscape, as you know, has been perhaps a very divisive thing. And this year there's a great movie called Humanist Vampires Seeking Consenting Suicidal. Yeah, so it's so terrific. And then there's another film called The Vertilac. So you're getting those vampire stories, but they're very different kind of postmodern takes on them. One's a very dark comedy. One can only be called like a psychedelic folk tale, maybe. And so that there's things like that. There's a terrific, you know, number of movies about sleep and nightmares this year, and like the idea of sleepwalking. There's so many stories based in like folklore and literature that it's just been really fun to kind of assemble those themes. And then even more so, we're doing a salute to the Twilight Zone this year with Rod Serling, the original creator's daughter, Anne. It's been just an incredible thing to put together. And when we started to research the show to put our own little presentation together, we started to see just, I mean, we already knew that it was influential, but to start to see the DNA of so many thousands of things, you know, the Twilight Zone, just even this year, there's dozens of movies that were directly influenced by it. So it's been really fun to program some of that stuff too. And even things that blend horror and sci-fi in fun ways, like what our closing night movie is going to be, which again, by the time this comes out, I can tell you it's a movie called The Fix, which is kind of like Grace Van Dien from Stranger Things got cast in the world's weirdest District 9 remake, but it really
Ooh,
fucking
interesting.
works. Got some wild body horror. Like, it takes place in a dystopian society where we're running out of oxygen. And Kelsey, this filmmaker who made this, is her background's in stunt performing. Like, one of her first gigs was on Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh,
So it's
wow.
like just that sensibility approaching this movie. It's just bananas. I love it. And I can't really describe it very well to people, but I really want them to see it, you know? So.
Oh. Well, I can't wait to see that. I've only seen District 9 once in theaters, and I've never went back to revisit it, but that
I
sounds
had
very
the exact
weird.
same. Yeah, totally.
But speaking of interesting takes on vampire movies, I just saw for the first time a screening of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I love it. That's another alumni of ours. And
Oh.
again, that was one of those, like, we love bringing in guests who aren't necessarily associated with a movie just to give it context. And in this case, he was associated, but we brought Elijah Wood in from Spectre Vision to give people, we almost like, we know there's so many Lord of the Rings fans in Chattanooga, and he got absolutely mobbed when he was here. It was like fucking embarrassing. We're like, guys, chill a little. But he presented that movie and treat like basically tricked at least 200 or more people into seeing, you know, a vampire Western that they might not have watched otherwise. And everyone just had such a blast with it. That's such a good example of, you know, something interesting being done with the vampire mythos. You know, I love that movie.
Yeah,
And
and then
her for that example, or
yeah,
for that matter.
she did a talk back after, so that was cool. She seemed like a
That's
cool
awesome.
person. Yeah. And then I always just mention to people whenever they're like, I want like an interesting take on a zombie movie. Have you seen The Cured from
I
2017?
really liked The Cured a lot. That's a
Yeah.
great example. Like, along with Train to Busan, one of the more
Yeah.
interesting things I've seen done with zombies or the undead in ages, for sure.
Yeah. So what you said you're like in the final parts of reviewing submission. So what is your schedule like when you are reviewing and watching so many films?
It gets crazy, but I mean, the other good thing, like part of our perhaps secret weapon is my neurodivergence, I guess. It's like I both love film so much that I'm always excited to watch a lot of it, but I'm also, you know, an insomniac, and it helps me get through a lot more things than I think some, you know, folks maybe as a single person are able to. So I kind of sleep at very weird times right now. I kind of like pass out at like 6 or 7 a.m. and then sleep until about 11 and then just kind of go about my day. But It's right now we sort of approach the feature lineup first and start announcing those as soon as we lock down enough to make a first wave. But we sort of close things off for the year by programming our shorts. And that's also cool because, like I was saying with the sub themes, it allows me to find things that really start to fit into this cool little puzzle or this little Sudoku board in ways that I think feel a lot more thoughtful, than just tossing a bunch of things up. It's like we kind of talk, the joke is that we treat it like sequencing a mixtape, and like if you're trying to woo someone with a really good mixtape, sequencing is key, man. You can't just, you can't go like slow song, fast song, slow song, slow song. Like you have to like be really thoughtful about it. And I hope that's what we do. People seem to come back, so I hope it's going well. Yeah.
Awesome. So you get through all the submissions by not sleeping. Got
Absolutely. Caffeine. Yeah, there's a
it.
creepy amount of Mountain Dew. I know that's a Southern stereotype, but it's here and we like it. It has sugar. So yeah.
Maybe this is a line of work I should tell my neurodivergent boyfriend to get into, because
A
he also
hundred
doesn't like
percent.
to sleep.
We're pretty much recruiting at this point. So you just, pass in my email and it's gonna be great.
So, can you tell everyone who's listening what the dates are for the festival? And then, can you mention anything about what the current lineup is?
Yeah, totally. Let me actually pull up my lineup document and I'll like take you on a gentle walking tour of everything that we have. But so our dates this year are June 21st through 28th. And we kind of split that up between on the ground and virtual. We are hybrid this year, but we want to make sure that we're not just making the virtual presentation an afterthought. Like I said, it needs to be as engaging as possible. And we even do things like it's simple, it sounds, but like we create a Discord server with a channel for absolutely every film and filmmaker that's attending. So if someone does watch something at like 3 a.m. in Arizona, they can post a question and that filmmaker's there. And it just becomes this little love fest for every film and every filmmaker. It becomes like these guest books, like people are signing and we do things like watch parties and things like that. So I really feel like this formula and straddling the two worlds has really been great for us because that lets us make the on the ground days kind of like a guided tour where you can hit everything if you want to, even the parties, but then you get to like the choose your own adventure part. Like you both don't have to be sad that you left because we're still going on for a few more days, but like now it's like a la carte and you get to have the experience of kind of programming your own little festival. Unless you want to watch everything, which we do have like a number of power watchers that do, and I salute them and their also sleeplessness. But yeah, I'll give you it. We're lucky this year in that we have five world premieres. I mentioned Kelsey Egan's film, The Fix. It's absolutely fantastic. Another great world premiere is a film that is currently called Alaska, and I hope they don't kill me because they're talking about potentially changing their name before the festival. So know Alaska that if you hear this, I was trying to promote your film under whatever title you want to call it, but it's about a mysterious sleep clinic and a per called Somnium and a young lady who starts working there and the very bizarre experience she has where her dreams and reality start to blur in, I think, really fantastic ways. And again, those Twilight Zone themes are really present there. There's a fantastic 19-year-old filmmaker from Australia named Alice Mayo McKay that is just, I think she's like probably 6 to 8 features deep in her filmography right now. And she is 19. And I just, that just completely is mind blowing to me. And we're suckers for holiday horror. You were asking about subgenres earlier. That's another one that I could have given you, and it would have been absolutely true. I love Christmas set horror films. And she's giving us the world premiere of her film Carnage for Christmas this year, which I think is just, it's like a 70-minute briskly paced delight of a motion picture. That's really fun. There's an incredible Czech film called Falling Stars. That's kind of like the Czech Stand By Me, except instead of just finding a regular dead body, the quest that the kids are on is to find the body of a witch. And in the lore of this film, the witches are celestial beings and it's literally fallen down like a falling star. So there's maybe like a little bit of Neil Gaiman and some other things in its DNA. And it just really kind of blends so much and it's really fun. There's an incredible movie called Love and Work that takes place in a
dystopian future where work has been outlawed, and there's like a rebellious underground of people that want to do odd jobs really bad. And it's a rom-com, you know, as you would think with that premise. So we go to complete Twilight Zone, and then it just goes into like Charm Town, and it stays there. There's a great movie called Red Rooms that I think we talked about briefly earlier. Just super, super disturbing, but just a blast. A movie called Sleep, that's the last film by the gentleman who starred in Parasite, who unfortunately took his life recently, but it's just such an incredible a movie about a young couple who the husband starts sleepwalking, and it grows creepier and more sinister as the movie goes on. And his wife is also pregnant with their child and is, you know, suddenly dealing with this spouse that is acting very, very differently. Just such a gem of a movie, and a movie that I've been glad to see some other genre festivals pick up. A movie called Sweet Relief that's as if like early Richard Linklater, who made Slacker, like Before Sunrise, made a slasher film. Feels like a hangout slasher, and like turns out that is very much for me, and I think it's going to be for our audience too. Got an incredible UFO documentary, like some really strange, fun things. The return of a gentleman named Joe Badden, who is just one of the strangest filmmakers currently working, who has a movie called The Wheel of Heaven that itself is just like a mixtape of movie madness. Like, there's not a genre or a trope this movie doesn't manage to like completely steamroll through in its running time, and I love it for that. And then other stuff, like, we are well known for our secret screenings. That's kind of part of what we do every year. And kind of like we were talking about with A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, sometimes that's about like gently coercing someone into giving a film a chance that they might not have ever, if they saw the synopsis written down, like that James Brolin movie I was talking about earlier, they might be like, oh, James Brolin in a mall with dogs, who gives a shit? But we do this thing every night called the Red Eye, both because like you've had a long day of films, you've probably been using some substances that we're not judging you for, and it's the last flight out of the CFF airport basically every night. And there's a secret screening every single night of the festival for all 8 nights. That's
Oh,
like
cool.
been a real joy. Like, we tried it last year, and we're like deeply maximalist individuals at heart. We were like, surely this is going to just exhaust people, and they're not going to have as much fun as we hope they will. And then it became the bell of the ball. And so we had to top ourselves this year, and I feel like we did it. There's like 8 really wild motion pictures that you will not see at another festival this year at the end of every single night awaiting you. So things like that. That's kind of the whirlwind tour. And there's so much more. Like, our wave that's coming out has over 32 more features in it. So we went a little crazy this year. It feels good though. It's like, you know, we're turning 11, and like the Spinal Tap reference is, you know, turning the amps up just 1 degree past the normal degree. And I feel like we've managed that kind of sonically speaking.
Oh, I'm so excited, and I'm gonna just have to have a lot of caffeine to stay up for those red
You,
eye
that's the
screenings.
key. Yeah, we even have coffee sponsors if you're here on the ground with us. So.
Yes, that's awesome. So I will put the information for the festival in the show notes. But
Okay.
moving back to regular horror questions, are there any
Yeah.
horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
There's a few actually, and it's stuff like, you know, a Serbian film, for example, if you're familiar with that movie. There's just too much sexualized violence and too much just hard. Like, I'm a person who's dealt with a lot of depression and a lot of anxiety in my life, and I've been in a lot of, you know, inpatient settings and group therapy situations where I've seen so many people that have been damaged by things that it makes it hard for me to watch certain stuff like that. And that's a movie that just isn't necessarily for me. Another movie that I do really like, but it's just so tough and I'll never probably be able to watch it again, like Martyrs, if you've seen that French film. It's so tough. I do think there's some value in it, but it's just not something that I'm, you know, reaching for on a Sunday afternoon kind of a thing. And I'm also, you know, one of those rare folks that doesn't really love Gaspar Noé, the director of things like Irreversible, Enter the Void, Climax. Like, to me, like, how many movies in your filmography do you need to have pregnant women being kicked in the stomach in, dude? Like, who hurt you? What's, you know, I don't love that stuff. It feels like it punches down in a way that feels counter to everything that we're doing in our presentation of CFF. And I don't know. I mean, again, I don't look down on or judge any other horror fans for where they find, you know, what thrills them. But gosh, man, some of it's just not for me. Also, like the guinea pig movies that are just torture for an hour and a half, can't do it. Yeah, not stuff, not for me.
Yeah, I think the only Gaspar Noé film that I've ever seen is a Climax, and I watched it by myself in a hotel room, which was
Oof,
interesting.
yeah. Yeah,
It was
sounds like
okay,
it.
but I want to see. I want to wait. No, he didn't do Antichrist. That's
That's Lars von Trier, and that's another
yeah.
movie that would actually come onto my list. There
Yeah.
are a few Lars von Trier movies I like, but like things like that, like The House That Jack Built, it just doesn't feel, it makes me feel icky in a way that I don't, love when I approach motion pictures, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a movie in theaters?
I've had a bunch, like it's funny because our friends at Panic Fest are doing the Blair Witch Project 25th anniversary, and I remembered, I think yesterday, I saw that movie when Chattanooga had like our only movie theater was in a mall, and Blair Witch for the Friday afternoon mall crowd at the end when the guy is in the corner and we're all terrified, those of us that have actually been paying attention to the movie, I had a very southern gentleman say, "Is he pissing?" and just be dead ass serious, and like unfortunately that like just jammed its way into my head for like a that kind of a thing. It's also, we've had a lot of fun here doing things around sort of the lore of movies. Like an example I can give you is like if you've ever seen the 80s Flash Gordon movie, kind of part of the the urban legend of that movie, where it's really not a legend, it's true. Sam Jones, the actor that played Flash Gordon in that movie, his dialogue delivery was, we'll just say, not what the directors wanted. And they pretty shittily overdubbed every line of dialogue that Flash was supposed to speak in that movie, meaning that Sam Jones never got to actually be Flash or verbalize for Flash. So we not only screened Flash Gordon, we did a live script reading where we completely recast the movie with a bunch of great genre filmmakers. Like, shout out to Jen Wexler, who made The Ranger. She was in our cast, utterly killed every line. Jeremy Gardner, a dear friend who, made The Battery and After Midnight and things like that. We just stacked this cast for Sam and gave him the opportunity to be the voice of Flash for the first time. And it was just truly one of the most touching and wonderful things. And so just stuff like that, just kind of ways to right cinematic wrongs or maybe give people some more context and let them know that they're like, I really, I there's a lot of reasons to love things that people sometimes pass over, and that's part of our identity as well. And again, why I think like what people like yourself are doing is such a public service, like by destigmatizing this, by showing people the care and the kindness that actually does exist in so many fans of this genre that, especially here in the Southeast, we've been made to feel like it's porn a lot. Like, we've lost a lot of grant money. We've received a few death threats, things like that over the years. Usually, when we show a movie with the word Satan in the title, which just has not stopped me at all. Last year, we had Hail Satan. This year, we have a satanic boba company coming to give people cold brew boba. With a little taste of the devil on a Sunday morning. So it's like, we haven't learned our lessons at all. I'm sorry, Bible Belt.
Great. Never stop showing movies about Satan.
No.
No.
Feels
What?
right.
Yeah, what has been your favorite horror movie that you've seen so far in 2024?
Gosh, I just really loved Late Night with the Devil and Immaculate. I thought those were incredible. Late Night with the Devil, full disclosure, is something that I really wanted for us last year, and I really, really fought for it. So it's like one of those situations where I feel super vindicated because I thought if we'd had it, it would have exploded. And I really feel like the reaction to it's been incredible. Immaculate was just such a blast to see. I literally had an entire family of people walk out in my screening. And again, I never want to see people traumatized, but like, did you see the trailer? Did your kid need to come? Did your 5-year-old need to be here? So, that stuff has all been really fun. And I'm also like, I make my little horror calendar for the year, and I try to see everything that comes out and any kind of wide release. I'm stoked to see the first Omen. We've also got Monkey Man coming out, and I know it's not horror, but it's so violent it may as well be. So some great stuff in the cards for the rest of this year too.
So what would you say you're most looking forward to seeing in the rest of 2024?
I'm going to pull up my literal horror calendar for you here. If you have a second, I will do
Yeah, of
this.
course.
So there's kind of quite a few things. Like, let's see here. I'm really excited nerdily about the return to Silent Hill that Christoph Gans is doing. I love the Silent Hill games. They're some of my favorite video games of all time. And that dude just gets atmosphere. And I really can't wait to see what he does there. I'm like, I don't know if you're at all a fan of like 13 Ghosts, the remake, or the Dark Castle kind of movies. Those to me are another like comfort horror. Like they're kind of fluffy. No one's really gonna get hurt that bad. Matthew Lillard from Scream and Scooby-Doo, who I love, is there. I'm like, oh, hey, Matthew Lillard. So it's like there's a comfort to it. The Tarot movie that is coming out, which is based on a 80s YA horror novel I got from like a Scholastic book fair with the name Horror Scope,
That
which
was the
is, you
original
know,
name
a
for the
hundred
movie.
percent. Yep. And so that they've created these little, you know, lore and mythology and these monsters for each of the cards. I'm like nerdily excited for that. I'm really excited about the adaptation of A.M. Shine's novel, The Watchers, by M. Night's daughter. I think that's going to be so fantastic. I'm excited about his new movie, Trapped. I think Alien Romulus looks like it's going to be a blast. And like, I'm not one of those people on the internet who was acting like they were too good for the Beetlejuice teaser. I was like overjoyed. Like, I completely think that's going to be wonderful. I'm so happy that The Strangers is coming back as a trilogy. I kind of love those films, like, especially like the neon soaked Total Eclipse of the Heart, like Strangers Pray at Night vibe there. I'm gonna go watch Twisters, which I live in like Hurricane Alley here in the South. Like that classifies as horror to us here for sure. And you know, even stuff like Smile 2 and later in the year, like Nosferatu, like whatever Robert Eggers does, I'm pre-signed up for. That's another filmmaker I should have mentioned earlier for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, there's so much good stuff coming out this year. A year ago, when my boyfriend and I were driving back from Pittsburgh, we stopped in Centralia, which is the town that Silent Hill
Oh
is
my
based
God,
on.
that's so
It
fascinating. That's crazy.
was very creepy because there were people we found like in one spot there was like an empty case of bullets, or there were bullets in it, but it was empty box, I should say. And then somebody spray painted on the ground, "Get out." So, and it was
So very
very
inviting.
rainy and misty. So,
Man, oh man, that's nuts. That's wild that you guys made that a stop. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then The Strangers, I thought of it today because I woke up. There's something called the Citizen app, which just alerts you to like things going on
Oh,
nearby
you're
that
in New
might.
York. Yeah.
Yes, I'm in New York City. And I woke up and it was like home invasion at such and such address that like 900 feet away. And I was like, okay. Because you were home. All right.
Our version of that is like we have the Nextdoor app, and it's like there's a rogue squirrel. You know, he's come back and he seems very aggressive. So yeah.
Yeah, the neighborhood app in New York City is just the Karens complaining about something, about
Good
somebody
times.
stealing. Yeah, I
A
love
lot of that
people.
here too, for sure. Yep.
Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Gosh, you know, we talked about those Dark Castle movies. I feel like those are starting to find their love now. Like movies like the House of Wax remake or the House on Haunted Hill remake with Jeffrey Rush and Famke Janssen and like this just stacked cast of like great character actors. I really love those, and I feel like people are just starting to kind of have fun with them. I'm also like, I'm not going to pretend like there's a single movie in the quote unquote Conjuring universe that I don't care for. Like, I like them all. I like the Annabelle that everyone doesn't like, and I really love the second and third ones. You know, maybe I, Arona, I didn't love quite as much as the others, but like, I love those movies. I love Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. I love watching them come back. So I've been a sucker for even the most mainstream of horror, honestly. I really love it all. And that to me is like, you know, you're not going to get deeply disturbed sometimes. Like that's the flavor of horror. You're like, all right, I'm swimming in the shallow end today, you know, kind of a thing. So
Yeah, I love The House on Haunted Hill from 1999. I don't know
big
why.
time.
It's very
It's
hard to watch. It's very visually like jarring.
a lot.
I went in 2022 to a screening of it at an indie theater in the city, and I went with my at the time boyfriend, and after we got out of it, he was like, "You're not allowed to pick the movies anymore."
Oh my God, that's terrible. Yeah, I'll get like to just completely shame myself further. I actually saw that movie in the theater in 99, liked it so much that I went back immediately, which is not a thing that I've done that much in my life. And I can't really put myself in that 1999 mindset to be like, why were you just like again now? Like, I don't understand, but yeah.
I don't remember if I saw it in theaters or not, but I definitely own the DVD, which I'm sure the sound and picture quality is fantastic
Oh,
on that
100%.
DVD.
Yeah. So, some fine special features that need you to connect to 1997's internet to access.
Oh
So,
my
yeah, for
God.
sure.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
It's funny you asked that question because I've actively been working on something with a few people, which is that I really love the film Carnival of Souls dearly. I think it's like a sacred kind of touchstone to early horror. And I've always been kind of heartbroken by the fact that the filmmaker Herc Harvey never, again, I relate to this guy also because I think I have that background in industrial filmmaking. He never really got to do anything else creative his whole life. And when that film was reimagined, it was reimagined direct to video with a fake Wes Craven executive producer credit on it as a Wes Craven Presents movie. And it was just filled with sexual assault and like weird themes that like did not at all fit the eeriness and the sustained, feeling of dread and spookiness that's kind of all over that first movie. So I've been actually trying to work with Herc's family and get a remake of that film produced, but I don't want to direct it. I want to get a female filmmaker to direct it. I feel like that movie, the original, is so male gazey that the only thing that makes sense at this point is to get a female perspective on it. And I love eeriness. I really love it when you can pull it off for such a long period of time. Like an example I would think would be like The Night House. If you saw that movie, I just really feel like it's spellbinding, for lack of a better word, and I just love that kind of vibe. So that's definitely the one for me.
Oh, that's awesome. I've never seen the original, so I will have to check that
Oh,
out.
it's such a treasure. Yeah, that's one that makes total sense that there's a Criterion out of. Like I feel like that's in the, the horror fan starter pack that I would hand to someone if I were to make them one.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, good luck with that. I hope you get that produced. And I think
Yeah.
it was suggested to me to show my friend who loved The Others, The Night House next.
Oh, such a good. I feel like
So.
that's definitely similar tone and like doesn't get too crazy violent, it's a good way to like spook them into love with the genre, I feel like. Yeah, and my parents like claim that they don't like horror movies, but I can always show them something like that and they'll be like, "That was great." I'm like, "You are a horror fan. You just won't admit it." So
So my last question is, if you could go back in time and see one horror movie during its initial release with an audience, which one would it be?
has everyone you've ever asked this question said Psycho?
No, 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 no.
I just think like I don't, again, like I'm sure there's like 50 things I'm not thinking of, and it would be really interesting to see movies that kind of like opened briefly and then kind of ruined their filmmaker's career, like something like Peeping Tom, for example. Like it was in the theaters for a day or two, but like I would have loved to see that reaction to the shower scene because people just hadn't seen anything like that. Or even The Birds, like that's one of the first places where like I saw someone's eye get pecked out of their head as a kid. And like that was like when my parents were still like quasi trying to make us go to church. And I saw that in like a youth group setting. And they were like, "Ah, it's PG. This is like the golden age of PG, like Poltergeist when faces were getting pulled off and it really meant something." So, definitely like those early touchstones. And then stuff like, I've only gotten to see a handful of the Nightmare on Elm Street series on the big screen. And I think it's so cool the folks at Panic Fest are doing the anniversary of the original right now. That's a movie that I would have loved to see on its initial run. I just adore it. I think it's wonderful. So yeah, anything like that for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was such a treat. Do you want to tell everyone
Oh,
where they can find you online?
treat on this end too. Yeah, we're just on at chatfilmfest.org because I'm not going to make you spell Chattanooga. That seems rude. There's lots of O's. It's like a banana situation where you don't know when there's too many or there's too little. So it's just chat, Chatt, filmfest.org. And there's a full first wave of films waiting there, and everything else gets announced April 16th, really early in the morning. So if anybody tunes in that day, well, obviously this will be out after that. So go look at it. It's there for you now. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to meet you in June, and thank you so much again.
Likewise, thank you again so much. You have a great night.
You too. That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Chris Dorch, and thanks again to Chris for coming on. I'll leave links to where you can get all the info for Chat Film Fest in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. Don't forget to check out our Patreon if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at who's there PC at gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.